With the rest of us, let me invite you to turn to Deuteronomy. We continue working our way through what is the Jesus backstory, the backstory that is the Torah. And with that, remember the Torah is divided into 54 parshiot, and so we're taking it section by section, Jesus being the fulfillment of the parshiot. And today we come to the 44th of the 54. We have 11, including today, we have 11 parshiot left. Parsha Devarim today, it picks up at Deuteronomy 1 and 1 and travels through chapter 3 and verse 22. And so continuing our way through the Jesus backstory, if you're grabbing a Pew Bible, by the way, page 125 will be helpful. The words are on the screen behind me. Deuteronomy 1:1, it says, we read, Ele ha-devarim asher diber Moshe. These the words that he spoke, Moses, El Kol Yisrael, to the Israelites. Reads, these are the words Moses spoke to the Israelites. And then goes on to say, east of the Jordan, in the wilderness, that is, in the desert. And then with that, from there, much of what we read, not only in this parsha, but really through the whole of Deuteronomy, is just that. These words of Moses, Ha-Devarim. In fact, much of Deuteronomy comes to us in the form of speech, or speeches that Moses gives. And central to our parsha Devarim today, central to that parsha is the recounting or the retelling of the story that we read about back in Numbers 13, Parsha Shlach, where on the sending out of the spies. And central to that story being told here in our parsha today, in a word, in a Hebrew word, is emunah. It translates as faith or as belief. From 1 and 32, in spite of this, you did not emunah in the Lord your God. You did not believe, you did not have faith in the Lord your God, who went ahead of you on your journey to search out places for you to camp and to show you the way you should go. What is, as the Jewish scholar and doctor Menachem Kellner, as he puts it, is more than, emunah is more than belief that certain statements about God are true. It is belief in God, all of which calls forth behavior consistent with a stance of dependence and trust. Emunah, and it's in this way of emunah, of dependence and trust, that then flows in and through the life and the teachings of Jesus. And so with that, I want to go to what is, I think, one of the best illustrations. We find it in the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 5, verse 21 picks up the story. It's quite a lengthy story, page 710 if you're using a Pew Bible. I want to kind of go through this story, Mark 5, 21 through 43. I want to go through it and then throw out a few words of my own and then a few questions for us to take into the week and reflect on. And so here in 5 and 21, it says, we read, when Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, back to the land of Galilee, it says a large crowd. And we want to think here, not just a large crowd, but this is like a mob. This is like a mob that is coming around and pushing in from every side. A large crowd, a mob, gathered around him while he was by the lake, referring here to the Sea of Galilee. Verse 22, then one of the synagogue leaders, noting this was the one, the synagogue leader was the one responsible for kind of oversight of the synagogue in a local village. He was the one that was in charge. And so a synagogue leader would be somebody who is educated, who is affluent, who is well respected. This would be someone kind of in the upper strata of Jewish society. He is, it says, named Jairus, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He, Jairus, pleaded earnestly with him, Jesus, saying, "My little daughter is dying. Please come, put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." Now keep in mind, for Jairus to come to Jesus was taking quite a risk. Jesus' relationship with Jewish leadership was really pretty tenuous. The scribes, the Pharisees, these religious leaders, the synagogue leaders, At best, they were apprehensive about Jesus. At worst, they wanted to kill him. Right? In fact, we read of them plotting with the Herodians. They didn't even like the Herodians, but they were plotting with the Herodians to kill Jesus. And so in every sense, this would have been economically, religiously, socially, it would have made sense for him to have kept his distance. But none of that matters right now, right? He is desperate, right? His daughter, his child is dying. Death is at the door. Verse 24, so Jesus went with him, and it says a large crowd, again a mob, they followed. So he doesn't leave the crowd, but the crowd follows him and pressed around him. Verse 25, a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had. Yet instead of getting better, it says she grew worse. So just for a moment, let's notice the text here. We read of this woman, but not just a woman. This is a woman who has been suffering, it says, for 12 years. Suffering physically, right? This condition of bleeding, right? And it says it's been getting worse. So suffering physically, suffering economically, we read she has spent all she had, and so now she is destitute. But even more than that, we could say she is suffering socially. And we can think back to Parsha Metzora in Leviticus, right? This woman would have been considered, as long as she had this condition of blood, she would have been considered unclean. She would have been unclean, meaning an outcast, meaning she would have been an untouchable, right? She would have been cut off from greater society. Right, she would have not been able to approach a synagogue, let alone the temple. And in essence, then, it means she's been cut off from the very presence of God. Verse 27, when she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Now, quick side note, there is a word about the coming Messiah that's found in Malachi chapter 4:4-1, and it reads here, surely the day is coming, it will burn like a furnace, all the arrogant and every evildoer will be stubble, and the day that is coming will set them on fire, not a root or a branch will be left to them, but for you who revere my name, it says here, the Sun of Righteousness will rise with healing in its rays. Noting that word rays here is from the Hebrew kanaf. It can be translated as wings or borders or even as corners, as in the corners of a garment. In fact, the prayer shawl that the Jewish people would wear, the corners of that prayer shawl were called kanaf. And there was this belief that when Messiah came, the Son of Righteousness, in the words of Malachi, when that Son of Righteousness appeared, there would be healing in his kanaf. There would be healing in the corners of his garments. To which we then read verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering, mastix in the Greek. It can be translated to whip or to lash or to torment. And so this woman, right, for year after year, she's been suffering, she's been tormented. Verse 30, at once Jesus realized the power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding against you, his disciples answered. And yet you can ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Now, pause for just a moment. And remember, Jesus is on his way to see a little girl who is dying. Right, this frantic father is with him on the way, and Jesus stops, and it says he takes time to ask, who touched me? Verse 33, then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, right, she's unclean, she's not supposed to be there, right, she's not supposed to really be in the crowd, in the mob, much less near a rabbi, much less touch a rabbi. And it says she told him the whole truth. And then verse 34, he said to her, daughter, here is a term of endearment. Right? Think of a term of endearment. Daughter, your faith, your emunah has healed you. Right? What is more than certain beliefs about statements about God are true, right? It is belief in God, all of which calls forth behavior consistent with the stance of dependence and trust. And notice here, Jesus, he accepts what is not acceptable. And it's there that he then offers her exactly what is needed, right? He speaks into her life and he says, go in peace and be freed from your torment. And then we get this shift of sorts, verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, verse 36, Jesus told him, do not be afraid. Just believe. Just emunah. Just think dependence and trust. Verse 37, he did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He, Jesus, went in and said to them, why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. But they laughed at him. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, Talitha kum, from the Aramaic, meaning little girl. Again, it's a term of endearment, like saying sweetie or maybe honey. I say to you, get up. And verse 42, immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this and told them to give her something to eat. Now, I want to step back just for a few minutes to step back from the story. And as we step back from the story, I want to invite us to kind of step into the story. And as we do, noting that Mark here does that thing that he does, what is often called a Mark and sandwich, right, where he interrupts one story and places another story into the midst of it. He kind of intertwines these stories. Interrupting here the Jairus narrative with the story of this woman, and then returning to the Jairus story and his daughter. Again, it's called interpolation. And the point is, again, that these kind of two stories share with one another. They interpret one another. And so they're two stories, and yet they're intertwined. Noting here, there's a lot of comparing and contrasting, right? The two main characters really are at opposite ends of the spectrum. Jairus is a male, right? He is part of the inner circle. He has considerable influence. He has a name. Meanwhile, the woman, she is female. She is an outcast, not part of the inner circle. She's an outcast, an untouchable. She has no influence, and interesting, she has no name. In comparison, between the unnamed woman and the daughter of Jairus, both are female, both are called daughter, both are unclean, untouchable. The woman, because of the condition of her blood and of her bleeding, and the daughter, because she is really a corpse. The woman, we read, is healed after 12 years of sickness. We're told the little girl is 12 years old. Both come face to face with Jesus and are made whole. And so with that kind of in the background, I want to wrap up by kind of centering us around maybe a few more words, all of which are deeply connected to this idea of emunah. Noting the way of emunah, it goes the way of intimacy and interruption. It goes the way of intimacy and interruption. Meaning to God, we are not simply kind of abstract faces in a crowd, right? Lost in unnoticed in the mob. Rather, we read Jesus here, he scans the crowd and he says, who touched me? Translation, who are you? Where are you? Right, this woman, she's not lost in the crowd. She's not some abstract face, some unknown. Right? But Jesus calls out to her, right? Who touched me? And I think it's true for me. Often we can feel like this unnamed woman. Right? It's not too uncommon that maybe we feel less than. We feel like we don't measure up. We feel unworthy. Maybe even untouchable. And yet what we hear here is that God says, you are my daughter. You are my son. Right? He calls to you, honey, sweetie, my child. Right? It's why he seeks the woman out, right? He says, don't just come to me and get a touch and then run away. It's like he says, wait, come back. Who are you? Right? I know I'm on my way to this really important matter. And yet I want to stop. I will stop here and now for you. And this is the way of Emunah. This is God's heart for the unnamed woman. It's God's heart for the little girl, and this is God's heart for you and for me. Right? More than belief that certain statements about God are true, it is belief in God that calls forth dependence and trust. And so with that, we could ask ourselves, am I living this way of Emunah? Am I living this way of Emunah? To put it another way, am I placing my dependence and trust in Jesus? Am I placing my dependence and trust in Jesus? Am I hearing his voice calling out, sweetie, honey, my daughter, my son, my child? Am I hearing his voice calling out? And then with that, I think at the same time, it begs the question, how about us? How about you and me? As we go about our days, to ask, am I taking time to connect with others? Am I taking time to connect with others? Am I willing to stop and be interrupted? Am I willing to stop and be interrupted? I've got that really important thing, right? Whatever it is on your agenda, your plans. Am I willing to embrace the interruption? Am I willing to embrace, right? Not as a nuisance, not as an inconvenience, but as an opportunity. Am I willing to embrace the interruption as an opportunity, right? To seek, to reach out. Am I seeking out the one who is hurting? Am I reaching out to the one who is needing a touch? Emunah, right? Intimacy and interruption. And then with that, and we'll close and have some time for reflection, vulnerability, and surrender. Because we read, yes, the woman is healed, but notice it's after 12 years of sickness, and the 12-year-old girl is healed, but after she dies. Right, God, it has been 12 years, and I'm still suffering, still waiting, and Jesus says, daughter, go in peace and be free. But God, my little girl is dead. It's too late. Where were you, honey, sweetie? I say to you, get up. And as we look at these stories, right, this unnamed woman, she's willing to risk her very life, right? She was unclean, right? And so for her to come into the presence of a village, into the presence of a people, into the presence of a rabbi, let alone to touch a rabbi, I mean, this would have likely been a death sentence by stoning. Right? Jairus, willing to risk his status, his wealth, his position. And so maybe as we reflect, we can ask, how is God inviting me to come with such vulnerability? How is God inviting me into his presence with such vulnerability, right? To bring all of who I am. To bring everything I've done, everything I've left undone. To bring my hopes, my dreams, my fears, my failures, my losses, my shame? What would it look like to offer all of myself to God today? What would it look like to offer all of myself to God today, right? To surrender it all at Jesus' feet, to lay it all down. What would it look like to practice laying it down, laying it all down and letting go? What would it look like to practice? In other words, what is God inviting me to surrender to Him today? What is God inviting me to surrender to Him today? This is the way of Emunah. Ele HaDevarim, Asher Dibir Moshe. These are the words that Moses spoke.